At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
To teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to another Tour Life episode. You got Brody and Yuli, as always. We're going to break down all the things that went down last week. But before we get into it, this podcast episode is sponsored by Paragon. All you tournament directors or clubs looking for your basic necessities, Paragon is here for you. If you need t-shirts, hoodies, hats, bag tags, tee signs, tents, flags, course signage, or full sublimated jerseys, look no further. Paragon is more than printers. They are partners in disc golf as well. They sponsor many big events like the 2023 AM Worlds, the 2022 Junior and Master Worlds. They have worked with many other events over the years and continue to meet the ever-changing needs of the sport. Paragon, we print disc golf. Shout out to Paragon for sponsoring tonight's episode. Yuli, how we doing, brother? How's the body feeling after going through the practice round with me and Ezra yesterday?
You didn't warn me about that, first of all. Hey, it was an Iron Man. It was an Iron Man round is what I felt like it was.
We never force people that practice with us to throw shots. We never force them to throw it, but there is that awkwardness of me and Ezra going back to our bag for the seventh time to grab another disc. And you're just like, oh, another one? Yeah. We're throwing more?
Well, and it's funny because you guys have similar games, but opposite games, and very opposite to me. And so when I see you guys throw a shot, then I want to try the shot. And then I'm throwing what I typically throw, and then what you would throw, and then what Ezra would throw. And then I'm trying to get like, dude, insane how much distance you've gotten on that sidearm. So then you're giving me tips about the sidearm. I'm trying that. And I'm like, yeah. Like, all right, pitch count, like hold.
Yeah. Pitch count was a real thing. Definitely implemented a little bit today. There's a new thing too. Some people are confused by the tweet I posted saying how I have a new step putt. I think Ezra came up with the perfect name for it. It's the delayed step putt. And if you're familiar with like how Isaac Robinson putts sometimes, how like Gannon Burr putts sometimes, Alden Harris, where they basically do their normal putt and then they kind of just follow through. Where before, yeah, my stepper, like my left foot was going ahead of my body before I actually putted. If you watched like the Portland Open 2 weeks ago and you saw like Adam putt, he has like the traditional step putt of where your foot goes ahead of your body and then you putt. This is like the delayed step putt where it's essentially the same exact putt that you normally have. Instead of pushing off with your back foot and then kind of holding your follow through, you basically just step through once the putt's already out of your hand. And I mean, I've been doing it, practicing it the last 2 days. It already feels so much better than the step putt that I've been working on for like over a year. So I'm very excited. But yeah, I mean, that's something that I think some people get confused about where they're like, why are you working on your game? Like that's, why are you changing stuff? That should be stuff that you do in the off season. No. If you're trying to improve only in the off season and not during the season, your improvement window is like 3 months of the year. Our season is so long. You have to be willing to make changes throughout the year to try to improve your game. I mean, you just said it, you were working on trying to get like more power in your forehand yesterday.
No, for sure. And a putt is a lot different as well. A putt is an evolving thing over your whole career. It's going to change. I've had all kinds of different putts. I think that's one of the things that is a little underrated that I see with guys who have been successful putters their whole career. Like even like a Macbeth, if you look at his form from when he first came into onto the tour, it's not completely different. The fundamentals are still there, but the stroke is going in different spots. And mine has changed drastically from here to there. Even like in the last week and a half, I've changed where I set it back, which might be a huge adjustment for me, but to the eye of like a fan or something, it might look exactly similar, but that change is drastically different for what I do, you know, but I believe everybody every week is working.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah. You need to be constantly working so that you don't get left behind. That's the big thing. If you're not working on a part of your game, someone else is out there and you're getting kind of left behind. So this week,
quick question on,
yeah, go for it.
On my last take, did it drop out? Because on my screen, it said network lost. Could you hear me through that whole process or no?
I heard you all the way up until the end. So I think I got most of it, but yeah, you were a little bit robot-y.
All right. Let me see if I have
a little bit on the robot side.
Bear with me for 1 second. I'm going to switch to my hotspot because it keeps dropping out for me.
I can talk a little bit. Okay. So this week, folks, we are both in Emporia, Kansas. This is essentially this is what they claim. They claim this to be the disc golf capital of the world. I don't know necessarily if other people agree or not with that, but that is kind of their MO. And you know you're in Emporia, Kansas when you check into the Airbnb and in the messages, they're like, hey, just want to let you know we have a basket in the backyard. Feel free to use it. So coming in, it was very nice to already kind of have that set up for us. So now we have like a two basket system set up in the backyard. So even after this podcast, I'll probably bounce back there and putt. Just going over DDO real quick before Yuli kind of jumps back on here with us. There are going to be a couple big changes. I have my practice round, which we're just talking about with Yuli. That will probably come out tomorrow sometime. So you can kind of see some of the new changes. They combined two holes. They combined hole 10 and hole 11 last year into a par 4. Really interesting hole. And then this year, hole 11, hole 12, and hole 13 are all kind of fairly new holes. And then they've added some OB and tightened some things up. But other than that, it's going to be the same old DDO from previous years, the same kind of event that we saw last year at Worlds as well. All right, we got Yuli back. So let's jump into some of the topics. I want to talk about the Zootown Open. I want to talk about Paul Macbeth winning in Europe. We've got the Nokia Open that just went down, which is on the same exact course that the European Open is going to be played on. The U.S. Amateur Disc Golf Championship went down. A few fan questions, and we'll wrap it up tonight. Yuli's got some stuff going on. I need to get a few things done tonight, so it's not going to be the longest podcast in the world, but I'm sure you guys are going to be okay with it. So let's talk about Zootown Open. Zootown Open went down. This tournament was in, I believe, Montana. I believe.
Missoula.
Missoula, Montana. Never been. I want to say I went to Montana. Is that where Yellowstone is?
Yes.
Okay. I think I've been to Montana one time then. I went to Yellowstone as a family. Very beautiful location. It went down. This was the first time on tour this year that we got to play some like mountain disc golf. So that was kind of cool to see. I didn't watch a bunch of coverage. I don't know how much you ended up watching, Yuli, because obviously Jomez wasn't out there since it was a silver event. But, it was an interesting course from what I saw. I think the big takeaway that a lot of people had was like the grass was just kind of overgrown and crazy. And the explanation for that is we're on a mountain. We can't mow the grass up here on a mountain. So,
well, Actually, I heard that they weren't allowed to because yes. It's like what they were, where they were, it was like, it's like a super protected place. And there's all kinds of laws for the Forest Service and everything to where you're not allowed to manicure or cut trees or even weed eat. They had to get special permission to just weed eat the greens and the teeing areas.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, it was a cool looking course. There was definitely a lot of elevation. I heard from some of the players that were out there that it was a very difficult course to like walk. It wasn't like the easy. It seemed more challenging on the physical side than some of the courses we play, which are a little bit easier to walk up and down. But I want to go through kind of, we'll go FPO first. Kristen Tatar takes down her sixth win of the season. This is her third silver event win. Some things to look at here. I mean, the field obviously on the FPO side wasn't crazy strong. There was 21 players in the field, which is a very, very low number. And, you know, 8 under ended up cashing, which was 18 shots out of first place, which was Kristen at 26 under. It was nice though, to see Missy Gannon and Katrina Allen back on the podium. But like I said, the quality of, you know, the quality of the depth of the field at this event was probably one of the lower on the FPO side that we've seen all year. You had Sai Ananda kind of in the mix there for a little bit and then kind of failed final round with a 62, not the greatest final round for her. But the big story and the big takeaway from this is really just how dominant this season is turning out to be for Kristen Tatar. I mean, we are starting to have to legitimately talk about one of the best FPO seasons, potentially one of the best seasons in disc golf. It's getting, I mean, we need to start talking about that at this point. She's won 6 times in dominant fashion most of the time. We still have yet, Yuli, we still have yet to see her come from behind. Like you said, we haven't seen that. I don't know if we do need to see it. I mean, if she wins like 12 times this season, do we really need to see her win from behind? Or, you know, her just boat racing the field might be enough. Did you see the new UDIS world rankings? Did you see this?
No.
So the new UDIS world rankings has her dominance index. And for those that don't know how UDIS does it, basically the dominance index is just how, it's like a point system of like how much better you are than the people you beat. And so you get a certain amount of points, and her dominance index right now is 3 times higher than second place, which is Paige Pierce. She's like at like 150 points and Paige Pierce is at like 48. I mean, she's destroying right now when you're looking at that. I don't know what the math would have to be for her to like drop to second.
Well, I think the most impressive thing that I even saw, that statistic is absolutely wild. But when we were in Portland, they had like odds to win the tournament and hers was at 68%.
Yeah.
That's mind blowing.
We mentioned that a little bit. I don't know if the odds, let me see if the odds are actually up for like, that's BDO crazy. Yet.
68%. You don't see that in sports ever with anybody, especially golf.
Okay. The win probability is okay. It's even worse now. It's 72% to win DDO. And just to look at that on the MPO side, you have Gannon Burr and Ricky Wysocki both at 17%. I mean, the next closest.
That's high. That's really high. 17% is high.
The next closest is Katrina Allen at 6%. I mean, we're talking like these are such ridiculous odds that I don't think they could make props for this. I don't think they could literally put a line out for this.
No.
The odds are so bad that you would have to bet like $100 to win like $5. It would be,
yeah,
you would have, it's ridiculous. So she's continued to dominate. And we also will have an exclusive interview with her that will come out sometime next week. I haven't decided if we want to have it be its own separate episode or like an additional bonus episode, or just tag it on to the end of next week's podcast. But we're going to sit down with Kristen Tatar this week, and it will be very exciting to see, because she's someone that she does a lot of press conferences, right? Whenever the Disc Golf Pro Tour wants to ask and talk to her, she will do press conferences. Obviously, she does her post, you know, win speeches and all that. But I haven't really seen her in like a long form podcast sit down, like more casual.
No.
So I'm very curious to kind of pick her brain, see what's going on, and just see where she is too with how dominant she has been this season. And
This is the most excited I've been for an interview. I think even and possibly more than Ken Climo, because of exactly what you said. Like, you don't see or do this very often. So very privileged to be able to do that. And then to just kind of go into the brain of somebody who right now has a win probability of 72%. Like, what is that like? I just can't wait to hear what she says, her responses to some of the questions we'll have.
Yeah, we'll see what goes down. So be sure to tune into that next week. It should be a good one for sure. On the MPO side, a little bit interesting. The final round ends up getting canceled. They don't end up playing the final round. And you have Evan Scott, and I'm okay with kind of how it played out, because he did have a 4-shot lead going into the final round. So it wasn't one of these things of where, like, he, you know, he had 1-shot lead and there was a bunch of people right on his tail. He had a 4-shot lead over the second place, Clay Edwards, 5 shots over Anthony Barella and Ty Love, who took third, and then 6 shots over James Conrad and Dallin Blanchard. So a little bit easier, I guess, to swallow not having that final round, but very surprising, obviously, when you go on Twitter or social Instagram or wherever you get your social media and you're like, oh, final round canceled. Congratulations to Evan Scott. He ended up winning. It's first time it's happened in a while, right? I don't remember when the last tournament was that ended up getting canceled. Maybe Waco when Colton won. Was that the last one?
No, I think it was Ricky and Calvin tying for first at the Ledgestone Invitational.
You're right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
I think that's probably it.
So 13 holes have to be counted to to count around. Obviously, in this situation, a bunch of MPO players hadn't even teed off when they decided to just cancel it. This brings up the question, because I think the situation we're in right now, it makes sense. You can't force players to change their travel plans, to, you know, change flights, add an extra stay at a hotel for the amount of money we're playing for, right? Evan Scott won $3,250. Second place was $2,250. The amount of money we're playing for right now doesn't make sense to do like a Monday finish. But it is something that I think as the purses go up and things continue to grow, it is something that needs to be looked at of what needs to change to try to get these rounds in. And I have a few things that I want to kind of run by you and see what you think, because I think these are some of the problems that we currently have from being able to get a quick round in. And I want to hear what your thoughts are on. So the first one is obviously having two events on the same course causes a big issue. When you have FPO playing their event and then you have MPO afterwards, you're not able to be as flexible than if MPO was just on the course by themselves and then being able to say, okay, we're going to do this instead. When you already have FPO going out normal, it's tough to make a change to how you want the MPO field to go, right? And here's are some of the changes that I think would be very interesting, and I would love to see even implemented or tried at some tournaments in the future to make these rounds, or, you know, start to finish tighter. Because right now in disc golf, we can all agree that if you go out in the morning and it's 5 miles per hour, DDO is a perfect example. Let's say, Yuli, you go out at you have a 10:15 tee time and it's 5 miles per hour. And at 2 o'clock, the wind starts going up over 10. And then at 3 o'clock, it's 15 miles per hour. And I have a 3:30 tee time. Me and both of our rounds are going to be drastically different. Drastically on a course like this. So do we start having players go out on hole 1 and 10? So you have tee times for hole 1 and you have tee times for hole 10. So you basically will have the whole course filled much faster than if you just have one person going off on hole 1 and then wait, right? And again, this is hypothetical that MPO is playing on a course by themselves.
Yeah, I don't mind that idea. I think for me, one of the bigger issues is I think that our field sizes are very small because of FPO and MPO being in, you know, under the same umbrella, to where, you know, our field size could be a lot bigger. And I think one of the things that could be done is to have more two course venues and take, have them both on different courses on opposite or even at the same time, to where everybody's going off pretty early. You know, this course has the FPO field, this course has the MPO field. Now that causes big time problems with like the coverage and stuff, because you don't have the manpower to really do that. But you could still do it in a way to where it's earlier tee times. It's the same way that we do it, but just have two courses, to where they play a certain course, we play a certain course. And you could double the field sizes. Same place, same area, everything, just double the field sizes. And I think that goes into like, and this is getting a little bit off topic, but it kind of goes into, you know, the discussion of like cuts and stuff, which I think was on the agenda for today.
Yep.
If we had a bigger field size, cuts would be a lot more viable, because then we have, you know, on, what would the field size usually go to?
Cause right now we have cuts right around like the high 40s. A lot of times, like the cut will be 43 to like 48 will be kind of the cash line, I guess. And that the cash line obviously is the same thing as the cut line, where typically you want to see that be kind of in the 60s, maybe even sometimes in the 70s. So that would push it to, you know, in the 140, 150 would be the field event.
And then if you have these two courses with those tee times or whatever, you could also, if you can't fill the FPO side to have the 150, you could even make the MPO field even larger for that as well, to where you're getting more entries, more people, to where you could even have them on the other course. And then you just keep flip-flopping the courses until the cut.
That the only thing I don't like about that, and it'll be interesting to kind of see how Worlds works this year, because I think it was okay for last year. Both courses were very similar, open, OB.
Yeah.
So if it was windy, it was windy for everyone. It's going to be very interesting this year at Smugs for Worlds, because you have Brewster, very wooded, Fox Run, very open. If one group plays on Fox and the other group plays on Brewster day one and it's extremely windy, and then the next day they flip and there's no wind, then the group that had to play obviously on Fox Run and the wind is at a massive disadvantage. That's the only thing I don't love about playing different courses same day, is I think you end up having a little bit more flukiness in the weather.
No, that's a good point. But still, to have two venues, cards going out on FPO going out on one course, MPO going out on another course, I think that makes a lot of sense. And we could add a lot of players during that. And I don't think if it's with that case, you would need more signs. You would need more signs, more tee signs. You wouldn't be able to print off like, okay, let's print off these. You'd have to have two sets. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that setup time as well for the staff, it would be kind of crazy, because I know a lot of work goes into that.
It'd be a lot more work,
but you would also be having a lot more money come in.
Yeah, true. I mean, there's positives and negatives. Some other things that I have on here to make pace, you know, make these rounds go by a little bit faster, especially if we're seeing that weather is a problem. Go ahead. Yep.
Back to your point, yes, I agree. Going out on 10 and 1 during those times, or just all the time, would be fine, just to get people in and out off the course faster. a great idea.
Yeah.
It happens in golf all the time.
Yeah. They have to do it with how many people they have. Switching from threesomes to foursomes, you know, if we end up having a cut and there's only 70 people playing in the field, we don't need to have foursomes. We can go and do tee times with threesomes and have the pace of play be much faster. And then
do you think that someday we could have twosomes? I've never played really in a twosome.
Oh, it would be so awesome, dude. It would be so
But imagine that. Like, I've never played a tournament in a twosome. You're really not allowed. I think you have to have three to a card. But what would that look like as far as...
It would be awesome. It would be so much better. I think we can get away with threesomes. I think threesomes are fine. Foursomes just seem like seems like a little bit too overcrowded. Having four people putt, yeah, having four tee shots, it just seems a little too overcrowded.
Around the tee box too.
Yeah, having, you know, four caddies, you know, have eight people or so. Threesomes would definitely be better. Twosomes, if we were able to, I mean, think about playing a twosome in the woods too. How awesome that would be. Gosh.
It'd be great.
But remove the pace of play. Cause obviously if you play in twosomes, we're now playing these rounds an hour faster at least than these foursomes. Remove that. The other thing that I think would be really, really cool with twosomes is just imagine European Open last year, Paul Eagle, they're on a card by themselves. They don't have these other two people that are way out of it that are also throwing and doing shots. You're seeing these two people go mano y mano down the line. Now, obviously, it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes one of those guys will fall off and there'll be someone on the chase card or third card. But when you do have it to where you have two people on the final card going head to head, it would be so much cooler if it was a twosome and you just have that duel down the line. It would be, oh my gosh. Agreed. It'd be so cool. The other thing too is potentially if you see bad weather happening, a shotgun start. So at 7 o'clock, you have 18 tee times. You're starting on hole one, you're starting on hole two, you're starting on hole three, you're starting on hole four to just, again, just try to get everyone, try to get the round as fast done as possible if we see bad weather coming. These are just all ideas. I don't know if these are things that they're really concerned with, but this is where we're at.
What do you think about real quick about the whole 12 holes and you're good. Count those 12s. I never really like that. I think you just scratch the whole round. If anything, the 12 hole thing is a little ridiculous to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could make sense just to get two rounds in. And you can't because it keeps getting delayed and you have to have two rounds. So then you add the 12 and then it's one round, 12 holes or 13 holes. And then that's your tournament. But I don't think if you at least have two rounds, you should add 12 holes as long as everybody gets through them. Because by the time that the other guys get through, they're done with 18. They think that is. And then gameplay changes so drastically for the other people who might know, like, okay, we're only getting 12 holes in now. I got to push. I don't think it's fair as far as that.
This seems like a PDGA rule that makes sense for like C tiers, B tiers, leagues, those type of things. Does not make sense for the Disc Golf Pro Tour. Just another reason why I think the Disc Golf Pro Tour needs to kind of branch away and continue to push for some different rules, some different policies on the Pro Tour and not have everything be the same. This doesn't make sense too much for the Disc Golf Pro Tour. All right. So you have Evan Scott, like we said, taking it down. The dude, he might be one of the best putters on tour. When he played at the Cascade Challenge and was kind of going head to head there at the end against Ricky, I was looking at his stats as well. His putting stats were ridiculous. His putting stats for the two rounds that he played, 100% C1X, 71% Circle Two.
That's bonkers.
Yeah, I didn't look up how many that was from Circle Two. I should have done that. That's all me. Because obviously, if it was like he was 3 for 4, that's not really that impressive.
It was a few because I watched the most of the coverage for the two rounds.
Mm. Yeah.
And he made a few. It wasn't just like one or two. It was a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was very, very impressive finish. Some other, we kind of went through the top 10 a little bit. Again, this field, super weak field, not too many people. A lot of people decide not to play, which we'll get in here in a second, but a player that I believe you ended up taking, didn't you take Dalen Blanchard? I think you took him.
I did.
Yeah. You ended up taking him. Very smart pick. He is one of the, you know, if you care about ratings, he's one of the higher rated players in the world at 10:32. I believe this was also one of his home courses. He tied for fifth place, and the dude said, "Hey, you know what? I want to let people know that I'm pretty good at this game." Starts off his tournament 8 birdies in a row. Just bingo, bingo, bingo. I mean, the dude was unconscious. He just couldn't, he couldn't miss. He was making everything. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what that guy does. I don't know. Like, you know, why is that guy not playing in more events?
He's one of those guys. He's like a James Proctor. I feel like, to where like the people who do know him know that he's nasty good. Like, and he plays a lot in Utah. He lives in Utah, I believe, Utah or Idaho, one of the two. And, he wins by like 17 shots a lot of the time. Like, he wins by a lot of strokes with the tournaments that he plays in.
I do know that he has 6 kids. So
I was just going to say, I do know he has a huge family, and I think that's why he's probably not on tour. That would be a big RV. That's a big RV.
Yeah. It's unfortunately, disc golf is not where golf is, where you have a big family and they can just travel with you. No problem. Or you go and play a couple events here and there and make millions of dollars. And then your family and wife and all that things, it's tough to be like, "Hey, I'm going to be gone for a while. You handle the kids and let me just make a couple $1,000. It's tough coming home with only a couple $1,000 in your pocket. So that makes a lot of sense. Hopefully he can jump into maybe a couple other events. Maybe he can qualify for some majors. It'd be nice to kind of see him, like you said, the James Proctor situation. I think that's a good comparison between someone that has a lot of skill, but we don't really see him on tour very much. So
I saw him play at the, you know, the biggest tournament, I think, in recent history that he played was the Utah Worlds, where James won it. I believe he at least made it to like the third card or something for a few rounds. So he's not a joke.
Well, we had a question here, which I thought was a fair question. They said Zootown had the lowest Statmando field strength score by a ton for all silver and elite events. Was it just location? If players don't like so many golf course events, why didn't more show up to a new wooded course to support and show they want those types of courses? I don't know how wooded of a course it was. It kind of felt more like a park style. You might have watched more than I did. The holes I saw, it didn't seem like the typical wooded course.
I would say it's a mountain course, not a wooded course.
Okay, so it's like, it's essentially a park style course with a bunch of elevation changes.
Elevation and rough terrain. Yeah.
Okay. To answer his question, why a lot of people decide not to play in this event, I think the big thing was we just got done with a 4-week stretch out west. Then a lot of those players that have to drive, the drive to Emporia, Kansas is not quick. It's a long drive. And now we've got 3 big hitters back to back to back before Europe. So we've got DDO, we have Des Moines, and then we have Preserve. So if you didn't take that tournament off, if you played Zootown Open, you're now potentially playing 8 events in a row before we fly to Europe for the European Open. To me, it was kind of a no-brainer. I just think where it was in the schedule and how it wasn't like super close to Portland either, it just made a lot of sense to skip that one out. Unfortunately, I mean, it looked like a cool course to play, but it just didn't make sense for me. And I'm guessing a lot of players kind of felt the same way of, you know, this was a good time. We all look for good times to take a week off because you just cannot play at a high level without taking, you know, some weeks off.
Yeah.
And this was one for me.
I think it's, well, the one thing that I look at is it was 20 hours from Emporia.
Yeah.
It's a long drive. A lot of these guys are on tour. They tour in their cars from spot to spot.
Yeah.
I'm lucky enough. I fly in and out of spots normally. And then if it's close proximity, I'll drive with Brad, my caddy. And then the other thing is, listen, and people got on me the last time I was talking about this, but it's a silver series. It ain't that big a deal. I'm sorry. If it was an elite series, guess who would have been there?
There would be a lot
everybody,
more people. Yep.
Everybody.
You only can count three silver events, and there's already a bunch of people that have a bunch of, you know, good finishes at silvers that they're not really looking to play in anymore. You know, you mentioned that you have two good finishes. You only need to pick up one more, right?
Yeah, and then I'm done.
And then, like, you're done.
It's funny. It's funny because I had a lot of comments when I said, "What would it, when we were talking about if it would mean the world to you if you win a silver?" And I said, "No, it wouldn't mean anything to me. I'm standing by it, and it's not because I'm cocky and I'm a douche. That's literally how I feel. You know what I mean? That's like what I feel. I wouldn't. It wouldn't like change my life."
And yeah, no, it's a much. If you would have won Zootown versus Evan winning Zootown, like, those are two different things. Two different things for sure.
Mm-hmm. And it's a silver. Nobody went to it because they don't have to, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that important. I mean, it is to get your three tournaments in, you need that in order to even have a chance to qualify. Really, you need that, especially if you're not one of the top, let's say, 10 players in the world who get enough points in the first 10 or in the first like six tournaments to probably make the finale. They really do. For the rest of everybody, you, like, I need to play those. So it is important.
Yeah.
But I think moving forward in 5 years, we're not going to be talking about Silver Series. We won't.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. A lot of people have different thoughts on like what's going to happen with those. So it'll be interesting to see. I did want to throw up real quick. There's a big sale going on right now. Just want to let everyone know that's watching and listening. Big sale going on, brodysmith.discraft.com. If you use the code DARK20, you get 20% off your entire order. So there's tons of stuff on there. Discs, jerseys, umbrellas, towels, all sorts of different things. So if you want to... I think there's some hats, maybe they might be sold out. I'm not sure. There's some stuff that's sold out, but if you want to check it out, DARK20, use code DARK20, you can get 20% off. So check that out. And also we have our Twitter giveaway with Yuli's first run Captain's Raptor and then my Tour Series Zone OS. These two discs, both signed by me and Yuli. These will be going, I will be picking a winner this week on Tour Life's Twitter. So if you're not following Tour Life's Twitter, you have no chance of winning these. So go over to Tour Life. I think it's Tour Life_pod. Tour Life_pod on Twitter. Make sure you're following the our Twitter account and enter in to potentially win these bad boys. So these are your last chance. The winner will be announced very soon. All right, let's move on. Paul McBeth wins in Europe at the Pro Forester. Yuli, I'm going to start off. I'm going to list some tournaments, and I want you to tell me what these tournaments have in common. Okay. All right, here we go. The Memorial Championship, Shelly Sharp.
Ratings.
Nope. Shelly Sharp.
Oh, come on.
Shelly Sharp Memorial, 303 Open, Crush on Conco, Open at Tallahassee, The Majestic, Challenge at Goat Hill, Mobile Championships, Throw Down the Mountain, Huck Central, Maricopa Open, and the High Plains Challenge. What do all those have in common? It's not a trick question either.
They're tournaments.
They are all tournaments. I agree.
Disc golf tournaments.
Yes.
I don't know.
Be a little more specific.
Those are tournaments that Paul had won.
No, these were all tournaments that had higher strength of field than the Pro Forester. So we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast that disc golf to me is very similar to the UFC a little bit, where someone will like have a fight and they'll knock someone out and everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest fighter of all time. Or the opposite of where someone will get like choked out and then everyone's like, oh, this guy's washed. He can't fight. He's over. We just saw the biggest roller coaster swing of all time. Paul had a bad tournament, and we talked about this last week. People need to start getting okay. Fans need to start getting okay with their favorite pros or their least favorite, whatever it is, having bad tournaments. And it's not because of an injury. It's not because they slipped on a tee pad. It's not because they have whatever. Not everyone's going to play that well all the time, especially when more and more players are getting better and better. When you kind of have an off tournament, you're going to fall down lower than you normally will. So last week, tons of people were basically saying, Paul McBeth sucks. He's over. Look what he can't do anything. And I just thought that was a really over exaggeration of what ended up happening. He just had a bad tournament. And now a week later, he plays at this Pro Forester, which is on the European tour. There's two different tours on the European Open or in Europe, and I get them confused. I don't know if you are familiar with them, but he plays on a event, the Pro Forester, and he ends up winning. And there was just a lot of like, oh, he's back. And I feel like everyone we need to just wait a little bit, because like I said, I just listed off a bunch of tournaments. Half of those tournaments I've never even heard of, that had better strength of field. And just to give an idea, the strength of field at the Pro Forester was 7.65. The strength of field at the Zootown Open was 24.7. So the strength of field was about three times higher at Zootown Open than it was at this event. So we all need to I think everyone just needs to kind of pump the brakes. I do think obviously a win is a big thing for his mental side, his confidence, right? Having that, okay, I can still win at whatever level. Aaron Gossage is a very interesting kind of connection. Is Aaron Gossage, if you go and look before OTB, if you go and look at Aaron Gossage's season before OTB, it was kind of lackluster. Wasn't really having that great a finish. He goes home, plays in a local B tier event, wins it, and literally texted us. I believe like Ezra texted him right after he won saying, hey man, congratulations on winning. And he's like, yeah, this is exactly what I needed to get my confidence. And then now we've seen what happens when he goes to OTB Portland. You know, we see him now all of a sudden fighting for these wins. So I'm not going to discredit that, but I think we need to pump the brakes a little bit on saying like, he's back to where he was at. I don't think he ever really even left. First off, I don't think he's gotten worse. I think
we talked about it last week. I don't care what he does. I don't care the tournaments that he plays. I think it's good for the sport, and that's great and everything. And he's growing the sport in Europe, and more fans get to watch Paul McBeth, which is the most popular figure that we have. So that's incredible. That's what I care about.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know for a fact he does not care about it either. He cares about major championships, and that's where he will be judged. So when we go to the European Open, let's have this conversation again, and then we can completely find out where he is on this season with the way that he performs there. Because you never know. If he has another, you know, battle with Eagle, well, then yeah, he's back. If he wins it, if he gets top five, then we can shut it all down and be like, oh yeah, he didn't have a great tournament, but still top five. That's great. Or he wins. Or if he gets 23rd, then we can have a nice little conversation of being like, this dude's kind of washed, bro. You know what I mean? Until things like that happen at majors, because that's what our job is at podcasters, is to break down those things that actually happen that are important. Him going over and playing in Europe he's going to lose sometimes. Like you said, there's a lot of good players. And maybe he doesn't. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't have been surprised if he just won all the events all the way through. It would have been, but it wouldn't have meant.
I think that's what a lot of people were expecting. Yeah, I think a lot of people were expecting that. He was basically just going to go over and rack up a bunch of points.
But after the European Open, let's have the conversation again.
Yeah.
It'll be an interesting one.
Yeah. I just want everyone to kind of, you know, on this is just like for everyone. We need to kind of just look at a bigger scope, a bigger scale. And again,
yeah,
we can't judge the same way that we judged even 3 years ago, right? 2020, the way we judge players in 2020, we can't judge them the same scale as now because the sport has changed so much. I mean, beginning of the season, what were we saying about Gannon Burr, right? We were saying Gannon Burr is unbeatable. Like, oh my God, this guy's just going to rattle off. And, you know, he's kind of fallen out of the, you know, I wouldn't say he's completely fallen off, but now there's other talks of other players, you know? And I just think we have to kind of look at the grand scheme of things because Simon, I think, said this perfectly, you know, one or two strokes here and there, that's the difference between 10th place and 30th place. And that wasn't necessarily the case that long ago. In the European Open this year, Yuli, it's going to have a much better field than last year. Much better.
I still think, yeah, no, I agree. I agree with that. I also think that there's a big gap between like the top 12 players in the world and everybody else. And yes. I think it's a big gap. I think there's a really big gap that we're not mentioning. I think that if Calvin, Paul, Gannon and those guys have a 30th finish, it's something to talk about.
I agree. Yeah.
Because the gap between them and everybody else is very big. The gap between Calvin and like number 30, it's a crazy gap.
Yeah, it really is. That conversation is the same conversation as if Ricky or Paul finished outside the top five.
Yeah.
That's that, you know, years ago, that's what would be like, oh my God, Paul finished seventh. Now it's like if they finish 30th, that's kind of in the same realm of boat of talking. So last thing on the Pro Forester, congratulations to Scott Stokely, who finished third place, which is a very high finish for him. I don't want to say this was the most prestigious event in the world, but again, a podium's a podium. Third place and Silver Lot, both of those two qualify for USDGC. So both those got USDGC qualifiers out there, and congratulations to both of them. It'll be fun to see Scott at USDGC this year, just ripping forehands all over the course. It is a big forehand course too. So,
yeah.
All right, let's jump to the Nokia Open. I thought I watched a little bit actually of this because I do love that course so much. There's so many cool holes. They weren't able to play the really cool hole over the soccer field because I guess they weren't able to shut down the event. And they had to change it up, which I didn't like at all. They finished on hole two because of the way it was. They had to finish on hole. Someone was trying to explain it to me in the chat. I didn't really understand exactly why, but they finished on hole two. So it was kind of weird not having that awesome finish. But hole 16 still ended up kind of being the deciding factor and who was going to win. Lori Lettinen takes it down this year. So congratulations to him. Let me pull this up. I can like barely see my mouse. Daniel Davidson, who I actually had a playoff with last year for a USDGC spot. He ended up taking second place, tied with Mari Vilmon, who I want to talk a little bit about this Mari guy. Now, this might be someone that we might want to put on watch. He has had himself quite a year this year. I talked a little bit. He is Estonian, and I think he now is if you care about ratings, he is now the highest rated Estonian player. I think he just passed Albert Tam, who has had it for a while now. The guy's had quite an interesting season. He, over the last several events, he won the Copenhagen Open. He won the Prodigy Disc Pro Tour stop in Helsinki. He won the European Pro Tour Estonia Open as well. And then he's got second at the Nokia Open. He's been playing some really, really good disc golf.
Wow.
We talked about him a little bit, but he's someone I would say keep an eye on this guy for the European Open. I don't know if they're going to put him on a feature card. I don't see why they wouldn't. It would probably make sense to throw him on there, but he ends up taking a double bogey on what we, how we play hole 16, that bunker hole, right? The one with like the hay bales and stuff. He ends up throwing, gosh, what'd he end up throwing? Four shots. So I guess he threw three shots OB and then landed on his four shot and then tapped in. Yeah. So he throws three shots OB, taps in for a double bogey, ends up losing by one. So the dude can play. He's got a really silky smooth putt, very similar to kind of a Simon Lizotte like spinner putt, and has backhand, has forehand, has everything. Was able to basically park hole two, which is their hole 18, with a hyzer forehand, which is like a 370 foot 380 forehand. So he's got power on both sides. Really good putter. He is the guy that I would say, of the European guys that haven't come over, he is the one I would say to look out for or to just kind of keep an eye out. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes. But Nokia Open, I don't know if you got to watch any of that. Very cool to see that course being played again. It's such a sweet course. It's so fun.
I didn't get to see any of it, but it's definitely one of my top, I'd say top five favorite tournament courses.
Yeah, that's fair. And the crowds that come out to that tournament too are awesome. Very awesome. All right. U.S. Amateur Disc Golf Championship. I ended up going up there last week, got to play Toboggan, got to see some of the changes and talk to Bob about some of the changes that are going to be happening for D-Glo, which I'm very excited about. They're going to extend hole 18 to make it a par four, which I love having a par four finisher. I hate par three finishers. Like all the changes, they ended up playing out there for the U.S. Amateur Disc Golf Championship. No OB playing on D-Glo, playing on that toboggan course with no OB, Yuli. I gotta tell you, it is so it is so less stressful. Like stepping up to hole one and there's no OB, and you're just like, I'm just gonna rip this, and if it doesn't do what I want, I'll be fine. Like it is so nice. Hole three is such a fun shot with no OB on the left. You can just rip a nuke and just try to get as far up there as possible. But Ryan Mulder ends up taking it down by seven shots. Wasn't really ever close. Had the hot round. He shot 10 under one round. Played really, really well. I went back and looked at some of the past champions. This tournament might be one of the better amateur tournaments that actually kind of shows what these players' potential is, because here's the list of guys that have won this tournament in the past. You've got Robert Burridge. You got Kyle Klein, Clint Calvin, Gavin Rathbun, Anthony Barella, Colton Montgomery, and Benjamin Callaway. So that's a good little list to join right there.
Yeah. Very good.
So Ryan Mulder, keep an eye out for him. It'll be very exciting to kind of see what he decides to do. If he does decide to go pro next year, I have no idea. He looks like a kid. I don't know how old he is. He looks like a Gannon Burr. So, I mean, he could just bounce on tour and start dominating. We never know. I mean, these kids nowadays.
Sometimes they just come out and they're like, oh yeah, I compete. This is easy. And they're like, geez.
You're like, how long have you been playing disc golf for? I've been playing for like 4 or 5 years. What about you? 10. I'm like, you're 16 years old. It's like, yeah, that's all I've been doing. It's been freaking playing disc golf my whole life. It's like, all right, man. I'm getting word that he's 15 years old. Okay. So
there you go.
Another, another young killer out there. All right. So I was fighting for my life last week on Twitter, like I usually do, right? About disc golf and teams and the sport's a team sport and you have teammates and all this stuff. And I was just going on and off with people back and forth. And, you know, here we have the team captain of Discraft So I thought no better person to talk to about this than you. I kind of just want to set the stage first about, can we both agree? This is a crazy question. Can we both agree that disc golf is not a team sport? or maybe you think it is.
As far as competition, yes, it is a individual sport without a doubt.
Okay. I think some people, and this is where I kind of go back and forth, because I'll say my take on it and then I'll leave it up to you. So, a couple things. First one, just because you are sponsored by Discraft does not mean I am going to want you to win over other people. So let's say I'm out of the tournament. Okay. I'm out of the tournament and someone is sponsored by Discraft and they're battling against someone else. If I have a closer relationship, if I'm closer friends with that other person, I did not sign anything with Discraft to say that I will root and cheer and do everything I can to have other Discraft sponsored players win. If, you know, hypothetical question, let's say I have a brother, you know, look at the Isaac Robinson, Ezra Robinson, right? They theoretically could be sponsored by different people down the road. I'm guessing if Isaac Robinson is sponsored by Prodigy and Ezra Robinson is sponsored by Discraft, Isaac is going to be rooting for his brother to win over Kevin Jones. So again, in that sense, to me, not a team sport. The team is, the way I view it is, Discraft has a team. The company views their sponsored players as a team. The players, I don't view the people that I'm the same sponsors I have as a team, as teammates. I don't. And I can see us doing things together because we're all sponsored by Discraft. That makes sense to me. I'm completely fine with that. But if there's someone that's sponsored by Innova or Latitude or Lone Star or whatever, and I just click with them better, or I have a better relationship with them, I don't view it as like, ooh, you can't hang out with that person, or you can't root for that person, you can't talk to that person because they're sponsored by someone else. That's kind of my take. I guess I can answer some more questions because I don't know if I answered all the questions I want to get to, but what do you view? First question to you, what do you view Team Discraft as? How do you view it?
Well, my position is a lot different. I've been on a lot of different teams. First of all, I want to say that I was on the star team of Innova. I was on the top team of Prodigy. I was on Discraft a long time ago. So those are the three companies that I've been sponsored by. And I was also on Dynamic Disc a long time ago, but they weren't a disc manufacturing company. So I've had a lot of experience with this whole team aspect of what you're saying, individual sports. So I have two takes about it. The first one is, as team captain, a lot of my job sometimes is recruitment, helping recruit good players to our team, right? And with that, I have to bring them to a place that is better than where they were, right? Mm-hmm. And if we can all agree that some discs are better, but for the most part, the best players in the world can switch to whatever and play pretty dang good, right? Mm-hmm. So let's take that out of the equation. What I have tried to do with Discraft since I first started was create a place that when people and players come over, it's a different environment completely. With that being said, I take the team element as that, right? Like, I am trying to help Bob and Mike build a team that is the best team in the world. Now, in order to do that, we have to be meticulous with who we get that fits with the brand, mm-hmm. right? And I know this for a fact because of all the teams that I've been on. The team that we have gets along with each other better than any other team out there. Been on the other teams. Like Adam, Gossage, you, me, Ezra, a lot of other people, we can get together, have fun, play sports, and it's a fun time, right?
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, you're never going to get along with everybody, right? But I'm trying to do my best to make sure that the team environment is a healthy team environment. Now,
well, let me ask you real quick on that. How important do you think that is? Because, like, to me, that's not important at all.
No.
To me. Do you think to some people that's really important that they want to be on, like, who they're sponsored by? They want to have, like, everyone be very friendly, like, of the players. Do you think some players view that as an importance?
I think it's different than that. I think that, I'm honest about this take. If you ask Anthony Barella which one he's more happy with, he'll say Discraft. And it's not only because he feels more comfortable, we're taking care of him and all those things, but he feels wanted because of the environment that we brought him into. So that part of it is a team part of it that is very helpful, I think, to the player.
But now, I'm wondering is that more because of you, Mike, and Bob versus me? You see what I'm saying? Is like the way I view it, let's say I go to Innova and
I'm gonna get to your point.
Okay, sorry.
Let me get to the point. Yeah. So with that, then there's a next level to it, right? We bring this idea that if you play good, it's good for me. If Macbeth plays good, it's good for me, because that is fact. If Discraft has the best team and everybody plays great and we have world, here's what sells disc. Okay. World championships.
I know, but I got to push back there. I've never bought into that though.
Can we stop there?
You want to keep going? Okay.
I don't want to forget that though.
Don't let me forget that. Okay. 'Cause I want to push back on that specific take. 'Cause I hear that a lot and I want to push back on that.
Well, here's this. I go to play pickleball and I ask who the best, when I walked into the pickleball place to grab a pickleball racket, I said, okay, who's the world champion? I want their thing. And it was Ben Johns. And I bought a Ben Johns paddle because he was the world champion. I know nothing about pickleball. And I grabbed that paddle. I purchased it and I walked out the door. Okay. If I did it, other people are doing it more than just going in and being like, hey, what's your cheapest paddle? Because I like nice things. There are those things, right? Now, there is no argument with this. I believe that if Discraft has the world champion on their team or the Pro Tour champion or wins all the tournaments, there's going to be more traffic to the website. And the website is where people will go to get those discs, and they'll see other people's stuff on there, and they could become fans of those players. Which means, just in that right there, forget everything else. There's your team aspect. Because if we're all doing good, everybody's flourishing. If one guy is doing really well and another guy's not doing good great,
What you just said is if we're all doing good, that's where I have to push back, because if I start playing bad, okay, I stop uploading YouTube videos. I stop this podcast. I stop posting on social media. So now all of a sudden, the only thing that I'm good for when Discraft looks at me, the only thing I'm good for is my performance, because I am no longer promoting myself. I am no longer producing content. Now Discraft has to produce all the content. So right now, because like right now, I know my value is so much more.
We don't recruit those kind of players, Brody. We don't recruit quitters.
No. Hold on. But hear me out. Well, okay. So say I'm an Anthony Barella. Okay. Someone that doesn't produce that much stuff on social media, right? His value for Discraft, you guys picked him up because of his skill level. So, right, you weren't picking him up because he has a big social media following and he posts a lot, but he's not creating content as much as some other people that, you know, myself, I know my value. The reason why Discraft initially got me was because I have a big social media following. I understand that. My point is, if your contract is solely based around your performance and you stop performing well, you start going downhill, you stop practicing, you start stop playing, just because you have someone that is also sponsored by the same company as you go out and win a world championship, that doesn't mean all of a sudden that's going to like help you out. You're probably not going to get sponsored. Yeah, next. You're probably going to get dropped. Yes, you're probably going to get dropped.
No. If I, let's say Paul Ulibarri. Okay. Yeah. Paul Ulibarri tore his ACL in 2019. I missed the whole season. If I was on another company, I wouldn't have made as much money, dude. I sold more because it was the most popular brand. It was the most popular brand because of Paul Macbeth. And there's no denying that. There is no denying that. If I'm on team, if I was on Team Prodigy, I would have lost more money without a doubt.
I agree.
And that really happened.
I agree. If you have, I mean, it is, I agree with you on the synergy side of where if I'm saying the Buzz is an awesome disc, and Ezra's saying is the Buzz is an awesome disc, and Yuli, you're saying a Buzz is an awesome disc, and you come out with Yuli Buzzes, you have a lot of people pushing that Buzz is awesome. They're going to be likely more likely to buy the Yuli Buzz than if you were on Prodigy and you were saying this disc is awesome and you're the only person saying it. I agree with that. My only pushback is when someone wins a world title, if you're not doing stuff on your side to continue to get better and continue to push yourself and promote yourself and do all that stuff, you can't just continue to get carried your whole career. That's kind of my point.
Absolutely. And job as team captain and Bob's job and Mike's job is to recruit and put players on the team that don't fall into that category, which I feel like we've done a really good job. You look at our team from the bottom up to the top. I think it's the best team in the world. Because we picked players that aren't quitters. They're hard workers. There's a lot of things that a lot of the team have in common. You know what I mean? We're not just picking on talent. We're picking on a lot of different things that we come together and we're looking for a certain type of fit. Like just because you're really good doesn't mean you fit on Team Discraft. We turn a lot of great players away, a lot of great, great players away because they're not a fit.
Yeah. And I guess maybe I am in the minority on the disc golf world, but to me, like the team aspect, I do think I agree with you that I do think some players value that drastically. Obviously fans do a lot. I don't. To me, the reason why I'm on Discraft is not because the people they sponsor, it's because Discraft, the company, the way they run themselves, my relationship with Bob and Mike, the way they treat me, the way they promote me, all these types of things, it's going to be hard for me to leave that. Like someone is going to have to come to the table and offer a lot and not just a paycheck, not just a number. Right. Not just say, hey, this is how much we're going to pay you. They're going to have to offer a lot more other things, support all this stuff. Right. And to me, that is so much more valuable. Like I would, if there was company X just starts up and they're like, hey, we have no sponsor players. We want you to be the only sponsored player. And this is all the things we're going to do for you. And all those things check my boxes. I'm not going to be like, I don't want to be sponsored by you guys. You don't have any, I'm not going to have any teammates. Like that's, I guess, where I am maybe different than a lot of people on tour is I don't root for you, Yuli, because you have a Discraft on the back of your shirt. I root for you because I have a good friendship with you. And to me, that is more valuable than we're both sponsored by the same company. And yeah, that's kind of my take on it.
X company. I mean, you just said it. The whole team, it isn't just the teammates. It's also your captain, your manager, Bob, the owner. Mm-hmm. That's the team, right? So you can't just like, oh,
I know, but people don't view that. People don't view it like that is what I'm saying. And if you go to my Twitter, you'll see there's tons of fans that don't view it as what we're saying, where it's like a business model where I view you as a friend, and then I view you also as a team captain, which is like what I would consider like the middle person between the player and Bob, right? Like that's essentially, a lot of people were curious, and you can maybe answer this, of like, what are, you being a captain of Team Discraft, like what does that mean?
No, I think I went over a lot of it just now, but I mean, I'm also a disciplinary, like if somebody does something that's not okay, you know, I'm the guy that calls them and, you know, talks to them. Mentor too, if somebody needs help and they need a ear or something, or they're going through it, you know, I've been through a lot of things in my career that I'm able to talk them through it or give them advice, different things like that. I mean, being a captain is also, I give this as a generic response, but it's just leading by example. Like I, like I said before, I Discraft gets players that fit into the team. And as the captain, I can't expect the team to do the things that we want for their contract if I feel like if I'm not doing those things. That's why I do the podcast. That's why I do the social media. That's why I, you know, getting on the Icon team, I don't have to be at any of these tournaments anymore. I do not. Mm-hmm. It is not in my contract anymore. I don't have to play another tournament. I do it because that's what I do. You know, I work. I'm a competitor. I go do those things.
Yep.
And so like, that's part of it as well, is if I don't go out and party or do any of these things, you know what I mean? Because I don't want my players to do it. I try to lead by my example. Back to my point with the team though. One last thing. Do you think, how can I word this in a good way? Would you think that our team aspect, it would be better than another team? Would you miss your teammates?
No, because
Ezra.
Me and Ezra aren't going to hang out in practice if I go to Prodigy year.
I'm saying then you can talk about nothing, your disc. You can talk
nothing
about
changes. Nothing changes. Literally nothing changes. And we've talked about that. We've talked about you know. Ezra and Aaron have brought up stuff about like, oh, what if this, whatever, whatever. And to me, like the only thing that maybe changes is like, I went up to the warehouse, texted the guys, hey, I'm up here. Do you guys need any discs? And they're like, oh yeah, give me this and this and this. So like I came back to the Airbnb with a bunch of discs for them. Right. Like
being a good teammate.
Obviously I'm not doing that. This is where it's interesting. I can kind of spin that. If I was a good teammate, I would have texted Team Discraft. Like if we had like a text thread with everyone, and I'd be like, hey guys, I'm up here. I didn't. I texted with the people like that I'm staying with. I didn't text it to everyone.
To give them what?
Yeah. But to me, a good teammate would do that for like, if it was an actual team, like an actual team where we are all working. Cause these are the analogies I have. I could see it being like UFC, where you go to a gym and it's an individual sport. You're the only one getting into the ring and you're the only one fighting, but you're training with other people. Now, the majority of the time you're training with people that aren't fighting in your same weight division, or they're fighting in a different, maybe they're Bellator or whatever. They're in different promotion. But you'll see it every once in a while. But for the most part, you're like a team because you have to have people to fight. You have to have teammates so that way you can improve. You can't just go into the ring by yourself and like shadow box and all of a sudden think that you're going to be great. Disc golf, it's an individual sport. I don't have to go out in the course and play with teammates to get better at disc golf. So that's where, to me, and I've played rounds with Calvin. I've played rounds with Gannon. I've played rounds with a bunch of pros where we're talking about certain things. We're talking about course strategy. We're talking about, oh, this is how I putt. You would never do that. You would never do that in a team sport. You would never tell someone on another team like, hey, this is what I'm doing.
That's not true. I've been on teams where my buddies are on other teams. And we practice together, basketball
on a professional level,
two different.
I can see it maybe in the off season. I can see it in the off season a little bit. And yeah, I'll be again, And what you just said too, though, proves my point. It all comes down to the friends thing. It's all friends. Friends to me outweighs teammates. I mean, it's just, it is what it is.
No, but the way that you spun that is interesting too, because then you're just saying that there's no such thing as having friends on a team. That is 100% true. If I'm on a football team and I go to whatever, and I get, and I go, okay, I'm going to get some gloves at Dick's, and I only text my buddies who are on the team, who I'm really close with, which happens in team sports all the time. And
you're right.
I'm going to get you a pair of gloves, but I didn't text my whole team. Doesn't make me a bad teammate.
No, you're right. That was that's a bad point. That's a fair point. That's probably a bad point on my point, my part. Yeah, no, for sure. I think for me, the thing that's just weird in disc golf that I can't really wrap my head around is a lot of fans want everyone that's sponsored by the same company to act like teammates. And my point is, we aren't teammates. I guess that is like, it's me and Ezra on final card at DDO this week, I want to beat the crap out of him. Just as much as I want to beat Ricky, Eagle, Gannon, I want to beat that. He's not my teammate. I'm not rooting for him to do well.
I think it's an easy thing to turn on and off.
You know, I don't know.
Especially in an individual sport. I think it's an easy thing to turn on and off. It doesn't matter if I'm competing against my brother. I want to beat him, of course. But at the end of the thing, he's still my brother. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't mean that I'm like, oh no, I don't have to get into this family thing because he's my brother. No, we're competing to sell discs. That's what your salary is.
Which
means if you do good, I do good. If Paul McBeth does, I do good. I sell more stuff.
If you start sucking, then you don't have a job.
I suck all the time.
If you're on a sales team, and you have other people around you that are they're selling out of control, I could somehow see how that kind of helps you a little bit. But if you start sucking and don't sell anything, you don't have a job.
I do suck. I do play bad. I missed cash at 9 straight tournaments. I still sell this because it's the number one.
But you also have. You also have a huge career as well. And my point is, like, if you're an up and comer on Discraft, let's say Discraft, this kid right here, Ryan Mulder, this Ryan Mulder kid, we signed this Ryan Mulder kid for a 5-year deal. Okay. $100,000 a year for 5 years. And Paul ends up rattling off 3 more world championships. Corey Ellis wins one. Adam Hammes wins one. Discraft is the biggest brand. That probably, yes, ultimately when he comes out with a Buzz or when he comes out with a Zone OS or whatever it is, he's going to probably be in a much better spot than if he's going with a company that doesn't have a world champion, right? But if he doesn't do anything for those 5 years and he's just like a mid-level pro, Discraft isn't going to extend his $100,000 contract.
It doesn't mean he has to have no teammates.
Can we agree that there's a difference between we're a team at selling discs. We're a team for Discraft to sell discs. We are not a team on the professional level of playing. That's where I just want to separate. There needs to be a separation between the playing team. We're not playing teammates. We are a marketing team. We are a sales team. We are not a disc golf team.
We are a disc golf team.
No, we do not play events together as a team. We do not. College is a team. They're on a team.
Okay, so my last point is, because this is something that I know and you don't have any experience with, and it is the team Discraft that Mike, Bob, and I helped build.
Yes.
Help
is very good. Is very good. It's I would say is probably the best in disc golf right now.
And I know for a fact that when kids look at our team, they think, I want to be on that team because of the way that we built it. And part of that whether you like it or not, is because a lot of players on this team do visualize it the way that I'm saying, because that's what we want. That's what we want at Team Discraft. And it's okay. It is okay for you not to think that, because whether you like it or not, you are a good teammate. You do promote, you do do those things, and I think that you are a good teammate, whether you want to admit it or not.
I'm a good teammate for the Discraft sales team. Yes.
For the Discraft sales team. But I think we can have our points, and it's fine, because I 100% see where you are coming from. 120%.
And I think I'm in the minority. I think a lot of people don't agree with me.
There's outliers in that. But I also think that certain people like the team aspect that we bring to the table, and that's a credibility that I want for the team. I want there to be that, because it is important to some people, and why not have an extra perk?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, my value to Discraft is so much more in what I do on social media and what I do on the course than like my interactions with other sponsored players, all outside of like Discraft, you know, whether we're doing a photo shoot or a video or whatever, sure, where like Discraft is putting it on. I don't think Bob and Mike could care less if I'm like calling up Missy Gannon to go see a movie. I don't think they care about that at all. So that's, to me, that's where it's like a weird thing, because there is that chemistry that you need. I mean, I play team sports my whole life. I know what it's like to have that chemistry, and it's so important to have that on-field chemistry with your teammates. And I've played with a lot of guys. I mean, I quit my Ultimate Frisbee team at a certain point because I did not like the culture that our Ultimate Frisbee team was having. I was having a super negative impact on my life. And so I ended up quitting, and I was like, I got to get out of here. And we ended up changing the culture to where we became better friends, not just on the field, but off the field. And that chemistry matters so much. I don't think if me and Paul were playing on a league card at Worlds, first off, I know a bunch of people are gonna be like, that's never gonna happen, but let's just say theoretically it did. I don't think our relationship is gonna make Paul play bad versus if me and Paul were best friends. I don't think, and that to me is where the line is drawn. And I guess I just get kind of, I guess you could say frustrated sometimes when I see people talking about like, that's your teammate, man. You shouldn't say anything bad about that person. It's like, okay, agree to disagree. We'll leave it at that. I know a lot of people want us to kind of go back and forth on this, so hopefully we did a good job. And obviously you being a team captain, I think that's like the best person to talk about. And I'll just leave it at this. To me, at the end of the day, what you, Bob, and Mike have created at Discraft, that is the value. To me, that is the value. Not if, like, if you dropped, let's say you dropped half the people on the elite team and brought in six new people that all suck, that I'm like, these are my mortal enemies. I hate all these people. The fact of you, Bob, and Mike still being there, that to me is what matters. Because what you guys have created and how you guys handle business makes my job a lot easier to go out and play disc golf, and that's what I want. So that's I'll leave it at that.
My question.
So take it however you want. There you go.
I'm taking it as a positive.
There you go. It is a positive.
Yep. I know.
All right.
Thank you for the compliment.
Yeah, there you go. Let's move on. All right, social post of the week. I don't know if you saw this, Yuli, but I saw this posted somewhere like on Facebook or whatever. It's a picture of a jackalope disc, and it says, they texted the number on the back. It says, think I found your jackalope in blah, 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 blah. Pretty sweet disc. The guy responds, hey, that's mine, you know, being super excited. And then the guy says that found it says, want me to leave it somewhere for you? And then hit him up with the, oh, sorry, by the way, I dye all the discs before I return them. Is this What are your thoughts on this? If this happened to you, where someone texts you saying, "Hey, I think I found your captain's raptor," and you're like, "Oh yeah, that is mine," and they're like, "All right, how do you want me to return this?" And, "Oh, by the way, I'm going to dye it before I return it to you." What are your thoughts on this? Is this okay to do?
No, absolutely not. I think it's hilarious. But I don't condone this behavior.
I honestly, at that point, funny. If someone was like, "Hey man, I'm just going to put the sick dye on this," I'd just be like, "Dude, just keep it. Just, I don't just, it's not even worth it. Just keep it, man. It's fine." I don't know. That made me laugh when I saw that. Cause it's such a peculiar thing. All right, we're going to rattle through some Twitter questions and then we'll wrap it up. This is from Mikey. Would disc manufacturers take a backseat as a sponsor? Say if someone were to be sponsored by Adidas, would they be okay with being number two? Do pros use/need so many that the cost of not having a manufacturer would be crazy high? So I think to answer this, he's basically saying, like, if Adidas came to me and was like, "Hey, we want to sponsor your apparel," Discraft 100% would be like, "That's fine." And they'd probably work something out about, all right, maybe Discraft goes on the sleeve. Maybe Discraft goes here.
Yeah.
And you'll see this too in a lot of other sports. The guys that don't have any other logos on their clothing, that clothing company pays for that. That clothing company essentially, right?
Yeah.
If I show you this shirt, I essentially have a spot here and here to sponsor. I got left sleeve, right sleeve, and then back. Those are all my spots. And if a clothing company, whatever, comes in and says, "Hey, we want you to only wear our shirt and nothing else," we just have to come up with that number of what it is so I don't have all these other sponsors.
Makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah.
The other thing I thought was really cool with Discraft, I was actually talking to Bob about this, and I agree with him 100%. He would love to take a backseat at like sponsoring tournaments. He would love if some other companies outside of disc golf manufacturing companies would sponsor an event, and then all the disc golf manufacturing companies can be present at the event, which I think would be the best of both worlds. Like having all the manufacturers put time, effort, and all that into the event, I think would make it way better. We're just not at that point yet where someone is doing that, right? The manufacturers are the ones that are really kind of fronting the bill, if you will, when it comes to that. All right. This is a good one. Besides injury, should there be a deadline to decide not to play a tournament and withdraw? Aside from destroying my fantasy this past week, it could also hurt coverage and tournament directors. Is there a point where the players are committed to the pro tour to play the tournament? This is Aiden Johnson. I think this is an interesting one. I think there right now, Yuli, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there is something with the refund policy of if you don't do it within like 7 days or something, the refund isn't like a full 100%. I think there's something along those lines.
I'm not sure. I think there is a deadline or whatever. And I think it comes down to the player just like, "Hey, be cool about it and tell them like I'm not coming." But I do know, like, for instance, this last weekend, a couple players went out there, they played the courses or the course, and then they're like, "No, I'm good." And they left.
I think that's fine.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Especially on newer courses, newer events like that. I think that's fine. I think too, if you can kind of, if you're signed up for an event and people think you're playing in that event, like it's on your tournament schedule that you posted or whatever, I think being open with your fans and letting them know like, "Hey, I'm not going to be at this event." Yeah. I think that definitely helps. All right. Sean Patrick Gray says, "What does it cost a touring pro at a minimum to be a full time on tour?" So let's just say you're paying for everything yourself.
What does it cost touring? Oh boy. Depends on what kind of life you want to live, man.
Let's just go with like a van lifer, someone that lives in a van.
Oh, well, you're going to need about a $50,000 van to start off, right? Is that about what they're using?
Yeah, I think you maybe buy one, like a used one, for like 30 or 35. I think
I think used it's like 50 right now.
Oh, really? Holy smokes. Yeah. Okay.
Like used, built out. I mean, you can go obviously as cheap as you want with that stuff. So let's say bare minimum, you're doing it like have a Ezra. Minivan.
Let's go Ezra Prius. You're living in a Prius.
Okay. if you're going Ezra Prius, I mean, it's pretty dang cheap.
Like $350 bucks to $250 bucks an event, right? Roughly for entry fees.
I think you could. Oh, with entry fees.
That's what I'm saying. Entry fees are like $250 to $350 depending on the event, gas, food. I mean, you're looking at what, like maybe $1,000 a week.
You could do it at $500 a week, but you'd be living the Ezra life in your Prius. Sleeping in there, eating granola for 2 times a day. Beans. Hey, beans are pretty cheap. So you could do it at a very, very, very minimal. But like for like, how about we just say what it is for us, for me, luckily I get my rooms taken care of, but that would be around $1,000 a week for stay. Flights are to go back and forth. Flights for me are about
$500 to $700.
Yep, $500 to $700. So there's $1,700. Food, 3 meals a day are, let's just call it $700. Yep, a day. So you're looking at, well, I only eat once a day, so I'm lucky. So
you're like $2,000. It's expensive.
It's crazy expensive.
Yeah. It gets real expensive when you're, you know, living a little bit more of a, I wouldn't say lavish lifestyle, but if you're not living out of your van, again, it poses the question, how do some people make it on tour? I have no idea. There's money coming in from other resources at some point. Cause
I think
if you don't have
Ezra life, it's doable though. It's, and you don't have to have
what
that.
If you're not cashing,
you would add some sort of savings. Yeah.
That's what I'm
saying.
But
you can sell disc on the road or do something like that. Or, I mean, there's ways to,
people are saying this is why you need a team. Oh man. All right. Joe Armstrong. I never found out why Kyle Klein DNF for Portland Open, big name to have a tee time and then just disappear. Yeah. I think he's been injured. I think he's got something going on with his arm.
I
think he said he was going to try to play this event. So we'll see. But yeah, he's been kind of having some arm issues the last couple weeks. Steven Pinrod, why is your bag so heavy and why haven't you went to some type of cart? Okay. Real quick, if you didn't see the Disc Golf Pro Tour Instagram post a few weeks ago when they had us all measure our bags, I said before we started, I was like, hey, do you want us to take like our water out, like our bottles and all that stuff? I feel like if everyone took all their bottles out, then you'd get like a decent, you know, reading of what everyone's bag weighs. Because if someone has full water bottles and someone doesn't, I had like 2 64-ounce water bottles in my bag, which gets close to, you know, a couple pounds, 3 or 4 pounds. So that's why my bag was as heavy as it is. I think my bag runs right now, like my bag, if you weighed it right now, it'd probably be around like 19 pounds. So I've also decreased the amount of discs I have in my bag, which I like a lot. Less choices to pick from, you know? All right, last one. Charlie says, how often do pros switch out discs in their bags? Seems like AMs have new discs every week.
This is something I wanted to talk about and ask you a question.
Yeah.
How important is it to have like a perfect disc in your bag? I think part of my struggle at the,
can you expand on that? What does that mean?
Part of my struggle at the beginning of the year, I believe, is my discs were for my arm speed that I was used to. And so they got knocked down a notch to where I was trying to throw them and they weren't fitting in the pocket that I've always thrown them on. And so then I'm all over the place. And now, you know, I feel like I have my bag back to where my discs are fitting in the slots that I'm used to.
Yes.
But when you lose discs or they become more flippy, you lose that consistency a little bit and you have to replace it. I think part of playing really good disc golf is having your disc beat into that perfect spot. So would you agree? And this is like, could it be possible that you have a window of your disc life expectancy to have your top performance? I'm just going to ask you that. It's a crazy thing to think about.
That, I mean, that's a good question about, you know, how much of someone's go-to distance, you know, if Eagle's go-to distance driver, if he loses it and now he's got to go and play the European Open, how much of a disadvantage is it that he's now throwing something that might not be exactly the way he wants it? I try to tend to not have too many discs in my bag like that, especially on the high speed inside. I have my beat in Meteor. I have my beat in Jawbreaker Zone. I have some of the lower speed stuff that is like perfectly beat in, can't get beat in anymore. And I know exactly the stability. I try not to have too many of those with like the Vulture. Like all my Vultures I have in my bag are brand new in the sense that they were in my bag last year. I don't know if any nukes in my bag, I was throwing them. I think maybe one, that overstable blue nuke that just will not beat in. That is like maybe the only nuke that I still have in my bag that I had last year. So I'm not someone that like sticks to, I constantly, mainly because I either lose them or they start getting too flippy and then I rotate them out. So I don't, I don't really throw that many beat in discs, I would say. I'm with you. I have like slots. So I have, for example, let's go with my buzzes. I have two buzzes. I have right off the shelf buzz that's pretty overstable. And then I have a buzz that's like beat in. So when my right off the shelf buzz starts getting a little flippy, I'll put it away. If I lose my beat in buzz, I have those replacement beat in buzzes that come in. So it's like, I kind of just have those two slots.
Yeah.
And if I lose one, I have something that can fill it in. I try not to be like, oh my God, I was thinking about this. I think there's only a handful of discs that if I threw in the water, I would be like, I need to dive in after that.
Yeah. But you have some. See, mine are distance oriented to where, like, when I go to a field, I mark the distances, and I just left one. I was practicing the USDGC course because it's the closest thing we have to like a golf course in the area, and I just left it on hole one. Luckily, somebody texted my friend Joseph and has it, and he's going to ship it back to me. But that was my 320 Pure Heiser Raptor, and that's a stock shot that I have a lot on tour. 320 comes up a lot when I'm measuring. 320 happens all the time, so I really need that. And my other Raptors that I have, one goes 300 on the dot, like if I hit my normal spot, and then another one goes about 340 if I hit it harder. And so like the slots are there as far as distances, not exactly like flights, obviously with variables of Anheuser, that one's going to go a little bit further or whatever. So I don't know, it just kind of popped into my head. I was going to ask you.
Yeah. And the way that my bag changes is actually very interesting. I don't know if this is common among other players, but to me, I definitely don't switch out discs nearly as much as, you know, he's claiming some AMs switching out discs every week. The way I do it is like, for example, my bag this week compared to Portland Open, I have removed a lot of discs. So like all my rollers are pretty much out of my bag. There's a few other discs that are pretty much out of my bag this week, but then I'll add in a few discs that suit this course. So,
yeah.
And a lot of times how I end up like having a new, like, I guess you could say like, this is my Raptor that I have, or this is my nuke that I have. A lot of times how it works is like, if I play a hole that I'm like, I don't want to lose my nuke that right now, this is my go-to nuke, right? This is the one that I like to throw off the tee shot. I could probably find another one, but I'd rather not. I have this one.
Yeah.
So like hole 18, for example, out here, you could lose your nuke by flipping it over. So how I do it is I just put a nuke in my bag that fits that slot, flies roughly about the same, and I'll just throw it on that hole. Same thing like hole 16. Yeah. I'll find a disc. Hole 16 is the island hole out here at Country Club. I'll find a disc. If it's, let's say it's like a buzz, I'll be like, all right, I'm going to put a new buzz in my bag, and I just throw it on that. And then what ends up happening sometimes is I get confident in that disc, And then that becomes like my go-to. So like, that's how my bag kind of changes from tournament to tournament.
Agreed. That happened with like my number one nuke was in my yard for a long time. I was talking to you guys about that, but what was the question again to make sure that I answer?
Oh, it's just like, how often do pros switch out discs in their bags? Like how often are you?
So we kind of touched.
Yeah. We hit that.
Very rare.
Yeah. All right. Let's go into our picks recap from last week. Not too much action. We ended up, you know, we haven't been great at picking players that actually play. You picked Isaac Robinson. He ended up not playing. He said, no, I'm good. But you did get a top five from Blanchard. I got a top five from James Conrad. So we both got 3 points, which keeps me with a two-point lead over you, 46-44, which leads us in to DDO. We cannot pick Marweed, James Conrad, Chris Clemens, Isaac Robinson, Garrett Gerthy, or Blanchard, which I don't even think Blanchard is playing in this event. So that is the guys. Yuli, you're still in last. That's kind of, I mean, there's only two people, so you're not really in last.
I kind of hate this because we just pick the same guys in every other week.
Do we? We might.
Yeah, because I'm picking Calvin. I'm picking Calvin, of course.
Also, I did get word that you had an illegal pick. You picked twice last week. I don't know how I let you get away with that. Which was probably Isaac.
It didn't matter. It was Isaac.
You had the first and second pick, which I don't know how you got away with that. All right, you went Calvin, which, you know, respectable. But I think there are favorites for this tournament. I think the biggest favorite actually for this tournament, the favorite, Gooseman. I think Aaron Gossage, if I had to pick everyone out of everyone, I think he is the favorite, the favorite of the favorites. Yeah. He just, you know, you played with him it's today. I'm surprised you didn't actually pick him, but maybe you know something I don't know.
I know Calvin's really good when I play with him too. Usually he plays well. So now I go, or do you pick twice?
Oh, I got two. Give me Gooseman and give me Wysocki.
Ah, that was the guy.
It's like all I knew what I'm talking about.
So you got Gooseman, Wysocki. I'm gonna go with somebody who we haven't seen in a while, Joel Freeman.
Ooh, I saw him out there on the course today. Yeah, he was talking about how he just got back from playing against Joe Revere, who is a legend in the Colorado area, I believe. And said Joel Freeman said he just came with the biggest comeback victory of his career. So he's feeling good coming. So that's a good pick. You get another one.
Well, that's easy. I'll go. I'm going to do this just because he's so dang good every weekend and we got to give him respect, but I can't pick him. What about since he wasn't there? Can I pick Isaac Robinson?
Oh, I'll allow you to pick that.
Okay. All right.
I thought you were going somewhere else. All right. I'm picking AB.
Good pick.
All right. So I've got Gossage, Wysocki, AB. Yuli's got Calvin, Joel Freeman, Isaac Robinson. There we go. We'll see how that all plays out this week at DDO. Other than that, I don't have really much more. I think a lot of stuff's going to go down this week. A surprising number of some players not showing up to this event. We'll kind of probably get into that a little bit more next week about how some people, you know, it being in Emporia, Kansas, kind of hard to fly in. I know that's like why Simon's not here. Is he's, you know, he's not playing any tournaments that you can't just fly into. You know, Kansas City's not the super closest airport. So
yeah,
we'll talk about that a little bit, how some pros did decide to skip this one out. But we aren't playing Jones Supreme. We're just playing Country Club, 3 rounds, 100 points on the board. And I think next week too, we might look at the standings. I think we're getting close to kind of, if we're not already halfway through the season. So maybe start looking a little bit at the standings, who's in the top 32 for the tour championship, who's outside looking in, And then we also have that Kristen Tatar interview coming up as well. So lots of stuff coming up next week. You got anything else for the people, Yuli?
Tea Times just came out. I just got a text, but no, it was an awesome episode. Enjoy.
Want to look at that real quick?
Conversation. I'm playing with.
You want to look at that real quick? You can't just say tea times are out and then and not expect.
You want to know what time? I'll tell you your. I'll tell your time. 2:10.
Ooh, who am I with? 2:10. I'm with Tyler Wozniacki, Eric Oakley, and Isaac Robinson. I'll be front row to let you know how your pick's doing. 2:10. Okay. There you have it. Looks like feature card is going to be Gannon Burr, Chris Clemens, Richard Wysocki, Matty O, and then Evan Scott, Carter, Ahrens, Calvin Heinberg, and Aaron Gossage. Looks like your feature cards for this tournament. So you're out late at 3:10.
Yep.
Playing with Mason 3:10. Ford. Very nice. All right, there you have it, folks. Thanks so much. And hey, this was a fun one because sometimes, you know, we get guests to come on and we kind of go back and forth the guests. Today we had a little battle between each other. I liked it. It was fun. I love the discourse. That's what I'm all about. Different ideas, talking stuff out. Mm-hmm. And look forward to many, many more in the future with you. Thanks, everyone, for watching tonight. If you did enjoy tonight's podcast, do not forget to drop a like. If you're watching live right now on YouTube, drop a like on the video. Let us know what you thought of it. If you're listening to it on Apple or Spotify, thanks so much. Make sure you drop a review. That helps it out a lot. And we've been really enjoying this season so far. We're going to keep it going next week. Thanks so much. You all have a wonderful, wonderful evening.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.